Jessica Negri makes costumes for video game and comic book conventions, which sounds like a craft room Etsy project until you look at her social media. She has 730,000 Twitter followers, and it just gets bigger from there. YouTube, 1.2 million. Instagram, 2.8 million. Facebook, 4.7 million followers. For making costumes? Not exactly. She broke out as a cosplay star several years ago when she wore a, quote, sexy Pikachu costume to San Diego Comic-Con, and her celebrity rose from there. Becoming Jessica Negri is a new documentary film about Negri making a World of Warcraft costume for a BlizzCon video game convention. But it's more broadly about what she does and who she is. The photo shoots, the costumes, the personality, the business, and where she fits into today's digital culture. Well, I guess let's start a little bit about the film. This is about an hour documentary feature. It's more or less structured around you getting a costume ready for a particular event. Tell me what's happening. Is this the kind of thing you do several times a year or all the time?
Yeah. So depending on what kind of event we go to, conventions are places where people gather that are of like mind in the nerd community. And oftentimes people wear costumes. They wear cosplay, which is costume play, and they show up. And they either purchase or create their costume, and they come and they try to make a big splash. But yeah, most of the time, it really depends on what event I'm going to. BlizzCon is a convention for everyone who loves Blizzard games. So it's anything from Overwatch, World of Warcraft, StarCraft, etc. That is the one I wanted to go to, that I wanted to bring a really big build to, because it's a very costume-heavy focused event where a lot of people bring their most elaborate Blizzard-themed costumes. So I was like, hey, this is going to be great. I'm going to try real hard on this one. I do this with other cons as well, but I would have to say that Blizzard is in top three of the most elaborate build convention shows, if that makes sense.
So what is Blizzard? Is that the brand that operates World of Warcraft, or is
yes.
that some okay, okay.
yeah so yeah, it wasn't Blizzard is
World
the
of Warcraft
company.
I was familiar with Blizzard. I was not.
Yeah.
And you are dressed up as a particular character from World of Warcraft. You've got these purple gems all over the costume. I guess yeah. Describe what it looks like, this costume that you're wearing in the film and that you're making in the film.
Okay. For BlizzCon, I was dressed as Alexstrasza, and she is the queen of all dragons in the game World of Warcraft. She has a very elaborate and ornate detailed set of armor that we, Zach and I, who is a artist, decided to elaborate with on a more intricate design. And she's got four horns on her head, all ordained with purple gems and gold and swirls and scales. She's got a breastplate made of gold and red. What are they called? Thigh pieces, claws, shins, a huge cape. Yeah, lots of glow, resin, and goodness. It's hard to explain.
And just in case anyone hearing this would think that this is some sort of fringe thing in somebody's basement, tell me how many social followers you have.
For Instagram, I have 2.8 million. For Facebook, I have 4.7. And for Twitter, I have 700,000.
And why do these people follow you? What is your, or do you give them advice? Do they follow to see what you're wearing this week? What kind of following is this?
I honestly don't know. truly, I don't know. I feel like I just got really lucky. People follow for costumes. People follow for entertainment, I guess. People follow for inspiration, maybe? I really don't know. I couldn't tell you. I don't think I'm that great. So it's kind of cool when people do follow, and I appreciate it.
Well, it doesn't seem like it's mostly a function of World of Warcraft fandom. It seems broader than that, you think?
Oh, for cosplay? Most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cosplay spans anime, video.
It's not specifically about World of Warcraft cosplay or cosplay as a function of, you know, Star Wars or Marvel Comics or whatever. It seems more like it's cosplay for its own sake, right?
Yes.
So where does that come from? Because I think when I see these things at Comic-Con or, you know, other conventions that you go to or see pictures from, you think of them as a function of fandom. But what is it when it's not a function of fandom? What's it a function of?
What do you mean? I feel as if cosplay...
Well, it's less about paying homage to this particular game or this particular anime or this particular movie, and it's more about the dressing up and the making part.
Oh, so like more about like the art or the craft or the like the general creation?
Yeah. Is that what it's about?
I think it's about all of it. I think having that fandom is integral to the crafting part, because you need that to be able to have that driving force and that inspiration and that will to create the thing and to really push yourself through hell and back to be able to make something. Because you can't make something of such amazing grandeur if you are not truly, truly passionate, I feel like. Personally, for me, like that's how it is with me. I can't put myself in that position and make something so hardcore if I'm not personally very passionate about it.
And not necessarily for most people that do this, but for you in particular, this is not a side activity to your job as a, you know, scorekeeper for a baseball team. I mean, this is what you is what you do. This is your job.
Yeah, 100%. This is my job.
And how does that work? You mentioned Patreon in the film, and I think some people may be familiar with that. But is that for the most part how the business end of what you do works, is through Patreon?
No. Before Patreon, there was Store Envy. There are comic conventions and Comic-Con appearances. And then there's selling prints at events. And then there's also representing video game companies in different outfits, or making an outfit for a video game company and then representing them at the event.
So you're getting sponsorship related to these different costume brands?
If it's with a video game company or someone that is seeking you to hire you, then yes.
And so how does that work? They call and ask you to come to a particular convention and you say the costume's going to cost X and the appearance is going to cost X, and then you just work that out with them?
Yeah.
That's an interesting way to work. I mean, it obviously makes a lot of sense for you. You've developed a big social following for it, and there's every appearance in the film that you love doing it and would rather be doing this than, say, making costumes for a stage production or for a TV show or something like that. Do you look at it differently than what those costume designers are doing?
I'm not sure, because I've only talked to a couple of people that do that for a living, and I don't have a good grasp on their perspective. So I'm not sure.
Well, the output of what you're doing is pretty similar. I mean, these things are going on to people, I guess in this case, that you're wearing for photographs or appearances. And I mean, they look like the real deal costumes, right?
I think so. I hope so.
You talk a little bit in the film about coming to the United States from New Zealand.
Changing who you are out of necessity to kind of just like fit in and not having people understand who you are or what you say is I think it's tough. It's tough on like an 11 or 12 year old. I went more into the fantasy. I would just be like in my own world, making up my own stories, like still like through middle school and high school. I joined the anime club, and I remember this one girl in my English class was like, oh my gosh, that's social suicide.
Is that where you think this comes from, that this is a some sort of an escapism for you?
I absolutely think anyone who cosplays is looking to escape, is looking to build themselves, is looking to adopt any kind of personality trait or part of whatever they cosplay. Cosplay is like almost wearing, it's literally wearing physical armor and like that, I guess, mental armor. You know, you get to be someone else and you maybe get to act a little different than you would on the day to day. You know, you get to maybe be a little bit more heroic. You get to be maybe a little bit more evil. It's very fun. It is a wonderful, yeah, you said it perfectly. It's escapism.
You moved to the United States from New Zealand. How old were you?
11 or 12. I think 11. Yeah.
So do you feel like now you're an American who can do a Kiwi accent or a New Zealander who can do an American accent?
I can try, but it ends up sounding a little weird.
So you're the way you speak when you just open your mouth and words come out is like an American now.
Yeah.
How different is that from when you first came here and you were in school? You were sort of branded as the other, I gather, at that time from the film.
It was very different. I had a really strong accent and people couldn't understand. So I remember this one time that was in it was like science class or something, and someone kept asking me to say something in particular, and they made me say it over and over again. And I thought they just liked the way that my voice sounded, but they were just laughing at it and being kind of mean behind the scenes, what I found out later. So it was very different. And then I started to have to almost like roll my R's more. So everything was a little bit more pronounced. And then it just started to evolve from there.
They were mean to you, though. I mean, this was, you talk in the film about a boy liking you, but not wanting anybody to know
that
he liked you. This was because of your otherness.
Just, yeah, because I was into the nerdy stuff. And this was before when nerdy stuff and like comics and video games and anime wasn't so mainstream. So it was a lot, people kind of didn't really think too fondly of people that were into that kind of stuff. And they definitely were like, oh, you're a loser, you have no friends, you're into this weird stuff. But this guy thought it would be cool to be real edgy and make sure nobody else knew. And I was like, okay.
The other theory you could have watching this film about where your interest in this stuff came from is from the fact that you say your dad saw Star Wars 172 times in the theater.
I 100% blame my father.
So even without the otherness, oh, and there was other stuff. I mean, you played Dungeons and Dragons with your dad and
yes, absolutely.
Your mom. You didn't exactly say what your mom did in Lord of the Rings. Was she an extra or was she a...
She was an extra in Aedaras. There was a scene where it was on the extended edition when they are burying Théoden King's son, and she's standing on the hill looking down at him, and you can see her, and she's just sitting there weeping over a man going into a ground.
So you don't have to have the otherness and the need for armor to have an interest in all these things. It could have come purely from your parents.
Oh, yeah, I think what happened was is I was like that, and then I came over, and it was just another little extra thing to be like, hey, you're different. And I was like, okay, all right, let's just go deeper down this fantasy hole. I don't mind. You know, it really did help me. It saved me a lot. I think fantasy and video games and anything for anyone to escape and think of a different world is I think it's good. I think it's great for the imagination. It's great for your heart and great for your creativity and everything. To really just daydream and space out. Like anyone who gives crap to people who play Dungeons and Dragons has no imagination and doesn't know how to create a good kind of campaign. And that's the other reason why they're hating on them.
The social media element of this started at a 2009 convention event where you dressed up as what you call in the film Sexy Pikachu.
Oh,
and you got photographed. Tell me what happened. How did that happen? You pick up a few followers and then it blows up from there? Or was it over a longer period of time?
It was weird. It was after San Diego Comic-Con, I think I touched on it in the thing. Someone blew up one of the photos that they had taken of me and it had my name and my location on the badge. And so then they found me on Facebook and then I got spammed with Facebook friend requests, and I made myself private because I was like, I don't know what's going on. These people know who I am. These people know where I am. Good Lord. So I made a Facebook fan page profile just to be a public setting to kind of just catch these people, I guess, to be like, I mean, like, I appreciate everyone coming to find my stuff, but I also don't understand what's happening. So I just made a profile, like a fan page, and just kind of directed everyone that way. Because they were also contacting like my family members, and it made me very like, oh my gosh. And so I had to act quickly. And I think it was a slow, steady burn for like the first year. I did a couple little costumes here and there and stuff, and then it was the next year at San Diego Comic-Con when everything started to kind of like kick up again, because more people came and found me and they're like, you're the girl from last year, can we shoot again and like take photos again? And I was like, I guess, oh, okay, you know. And it just started to progress from there.
So was your attitude more, if you can't beat them, join them, or was it more that you wanted this engagement, that you saw this as an opportunity to be a public figure, or a path to having it be a business, or a path to some sort of status?
I never saw it like that. I saw it as this is really fun. I'm meeting a lot of really cool people and I'm really enjoying myself. So I want to do it. At that time, I still wanted to be like either a forensic scientist, a nurse, a journalist. You know, I was still on that path. Like, that's what I was doing. This was very much like a side, like, man, this is pretty cool. I'm just going to enjoy this and enjoy all the people that I'm meeting that are in this world that I had no idea was here. So I'll just continue along this path and see how it goes. And it started to progress. And yeah.
There's a commenter in the film who says that you're sexualizing fantasy characters who aren't sexualized, and you seem to agree with that. Do you have some conflict about whether that's what you should be perceived as doing, or whether it is what you're doing?
I think it's very much what I'm doing, but I'm also a huge advocate, and I feel very strongly for women doing what they want with their bodies and not having people kind of give them crap for it. I think sexualizing a character that is not initially sexualized is a way of showing, what I saw it was a way of showing fandom in an adult form. I really liked Pokemon when I was younger, so I was like, how can I bring that into my current world and into my current life and what I'm doing, and how can I really enjoy that as an adult, you know? And so you kind of just bring it forward a little bit more. Because there's a lot of people grew up with Pokemon, and so it was relatable to a lot of different people, and it spanned a lot of different interests, I guess.
There's also, I don't know how to delicately say this, but some of these costumes are bikini-ish. They are...
They're sexual. You can say it.
they're revealing. And you... I guess acknowledge that maybe you're creating unrealistic expectations that other people could dress like that and look the same, but that you understand also at the same time that you may be creating those expectations. Is that the difference in sort of doing your thing as a, you know, a costume maker or artist or social media figure and someone else looking at that as an aspiration rather than something they can actually do?
The way I look at it is, a lot of females in our world and in our space are portrayed as very unrealistic characters, and a lot of men too. There's a lot of unrealistic expectations that are kind of put forward and put out there into our space. And so when people are coming for me about doing that to certain characters, I can't be too mad, but I can also understand it, because I understand where they're coming from in that aspect. But they also, it almost seems as if it's a double standard that they can be mad at me for sexualizing something, but the character is already like that, or the characters in that same area are already like that. What was the second part of the question?
Or is it an aspirational thing that, you know, like when, I don't know, an actress or a model would, you know, would have someone say, you know, to them, I want to be like you. I mean, what's your response to that? I mean, people look like what they look like, and not everybody looks like you.
I would say, yeah, I would say my biggest point is cosplaying the way that you want to. The definition of cosplay is costume play. And I've always put forward, do it the way that you want to do it and enjoy it the way that you want to enjoy it. Consume the community the way that you would like to consume the community. And don't, as long as you're not hurting anyone or offending anyone, doing anything that is in the wrong way, then it's okay. I think if you're going to dress like me, please wait till you're 18. Also think about what you're going to be putting on the internet, because whatever you put out onto the internet is going to be on the internet forever. I was unlucky and my name was out there, so I never really kind of got that buffer anonymity period. But just be very, very aware of that stuff. And I tell people that all the time, too. I'm like, if you're going to dress like that, just make sure you know what's going on. Talk to your parents, because my parents were very 100% fully involved in my life and the way that I was dressing and how I was going about it. So there was no weird, like, you know, I don't even know how to explain it. But
when people are dismissive and say you're just dressing up as the sexy nurse like it's Halloween, do you just shrug that off? I mean, with a large enough social following, I'm sure you hear a little bit of everything.
Oh, yeah, I really don't mind. The comments are, I know the comments are, this is the comments. You know, some people feel very strongly about certain things, and some people really like what I do. Some people really like what I do, and some people really don't like what I do, and I really don't mind. I feel like I'm having such a wonderful time, and I'm meeting so many amazing people, and I feel like I am talking to so many people that follow me, and it's always been very positive, and I really focus on the positive stuff. So the comments that come that way, I really don't pay mind to, because a lot of times they're like, oh, why are you a sexy nurse? And it's like, it's fun to be a sexy nurse. I don't know. Why aren't you a sexy nurse?
Rooster Teeth produced the film, and the film is premiering on Rooster Teeth's streaming service. For someone who doesn't know what Rooster Teeth is or what their streaming service is, can you describe a little bit what that is and how you fit into it?
Rooster Teeth has a streaming service called Rooster Teeth First. It's a wonderful community of people who want a little bit extra from Rooster Teeth and want to show, I would say, just more support and to get more, to dive more into their world. And I'm just on a documentary behind it, too. So you can sign up. It's really cool. Please sign up. It's great. There's so much stuff on Rooster Teeth First that's not public. It's amazing.
Have you been in their other projects, or are you someone who would be identified as a Rooster Teeth personality before this film?
We collaborate on a lot of shows, and I'm a guest on a lot of shows. I think it's really good. It's like a what would you say? It was like a cool partnership. Yeah, it's like a partnership. Like, I come in and say hi, and I'm like, "What's up, guys? Let's hang out for a bit." And they're like, "Heck yeah!" And then we part ways, and it's great. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
At one point in the film, you've been working for 48 hours without sleep. I think it says on the underline on the video. Is that part of why you do it? Do you like that part of it, the midnight oil part of these events?
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about just kind of being so in love with a project that you'll literally forsake any kind of like any health things, you know, and you'll just be going crazy with the lack of sleep and lack of food or too much energy drink. You know, it's just so addicting to get into that mind space, because it's hard to find that passion in life. And I think I feel very lucky that I found something that I'm so obsessed with.
What is a career path for you when you see the way the sort of social media and digital video world is right now, and overlaying your skill set and your interests on top of that? What does that mean for you a year from now or 5 years from now?
I would like to eventually get behind the scenes of cosplay and maybe even make costumes for other people and have them kind of wear my creations, maybe get more people involved and make multiple costumes for like a big event or something. I think I'm going to keep going. I think I'm going to keep making videos and tutorials. I would love to get a little bit more in depth in like what I do in like a vlog style life, maybe, and just kind of continue with that. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing right now, and I kind of don't really have a plan, but I kind of do. But I really like the unsurety of it, because then all I know is once I lose my passion for cosplay, I know I'm going to step down. But right now it's burning brighter than ever, and I can't look away from that flame.
Well, and it can change over time. I mean, if you're looking at it like a fashion designer, next season you might be making something completely different than what you're making right now. Is that how you think? Do you think it will hold your interest over time and that's how it will happen? Or do you think this is something you'll just be ready to move on from at some point?
No, I don't think I could let go. It's done so many amazing things for me, and it's changed me and helped me grow to the person I am right now, that I really want to almost like push it more and see what I can give back to the community in a way. And I also want to like practice working on new skills and try new things and try new projects that are really going to like push the boundary and really, really, really keep me up at night. I don't think I could walk away from it that easy. It's very much like this is my life. I'm too obsessed.
Well, I really appreciate you talking to me. I thought of this as a subculture as I was watching it and thinking about this. And the more I look at the number of people who are watching events like this and following people on social media, and I'm not even sure this is a subculture anymore. This seems like a pretty big
mainstream
deal.
Yeah, it's mainstream now. We've done it. We're done.
All right, thanks a lot.
No, I'm just kidding.
Thanks for listening to Consumed with Scott Porch. The show is produced by Andrew Steven with original music from composer Breakmaster Cylinder. Thanks to Showtime, Rooster Teeth, and presenting sponsor Curiosity Stream. If you like the show, we'd love for you to rate it and write a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, which will help new listeners find us.
The Podglomerate, a Sonic Universe.